This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Now, okay, we've heard this from you for years now. Passing the 28th Amendment, corporations are not people, money is not speech. I'm hearing people saying they think this can pass. Talk about a little bit. Where is the movement right now?
The movement has been moving forward quite substantially and quite rapidly. The Move to Amend group was, for example, was started, which is one of several, but I think probably one of the more prominent ones. It was started in 2010. They've now grown to over 281,000 supporters. They've got over 1,000 different organizations that have endorsed them, literally ranging from Occupy groups to Tea Party groups. Mm-hmm. This is totally transpartisan. They've got over 200 local affiliates groups formed for the principal purpose of passing the amendment. Over 500 local and county resolutions have been passed in the 2.5 years since then, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
28 citizen initiatives have been passed. Every single time this has been put on the ballot nationwide, it has been voted for.
And in Montana, didn't somebody slap it down? Was it Montana?
I'm trying to remember.
I'm going to jump in here and say, I'm going to jump in here really quick and say, Oregon also, don't forget, movetoamendpdx.org, okay? This weekend is the Democracy Convergence in Portland. It's the 2013 Grassroots Democracy Convergence. I'm going to try to post a link to what all is going on there, but I know a lot of people are coming to Portland for this big event. And Tom, I feel like the big story, the top story on the New York Times website was SEC gets plea, force companies to disclose donations. A loose coalition of Democratic elected officials, shareholder activists, and pension funds has flooded the Securities and Exchange Commission with calls to require publicly traded corporations to disclose to shareholders all of their political donations, a move that could transform the growing world of secret campaign spending. Tom, when we're talking about this, the corporate personhood thing, that little monster's got its toes in all kinds of issues. Talk about how big it is. Just how big is it?
Well, this kind of legislation would be a non-issue if it weren't for the Supreme Court declaring that money is not property. That stuff you've got in your pocket is not property. It's speech. Somehow it has something to say. And corporations are saying the way that we use our speech is our own damn business because it's protected under the First Amendment, that they have rights as persons. And this absurd dual notion that corporations are persons and that money is speech is being used by them to push back against things like efforts to make corporations more transparent and to disclose what they're doing, messing with our political system here in this democratic republic. I mean, it's just plain old flat out nuts that what should be a functional democracy and of by and for the people has become of by and for the corporations.
Absolutely. And we are live with Tom Hartman. Tom is going to be speaking. He's giving the Sewell lecture, speaking of justice. He's going to be speaking Friday night at the First Unitarian Church at 7 p.m. That's in downtown Portland, brought by the Economic Justice Action Group. And of course, the First Unitarian Church. Y'all do such nice things over there. Hey, Tom, this is what I was thinking of last year in June. Montana ruling could fuel campaign to amend Constitution. This is from June of 2012. The Supreme Court's Monday ruling to strike Montana's ban on corporate campaign spending opens a new chapter in the political money wars, fueling an improbable but increasingly vocal movement to amend the Constitution. Tom, here's another thing. Now, you've written New York Times bestselling books about this, but you don't. If you go online and look up Movement to Amend or whatever, people don't cover it. It's like the newspapers don't cover it. The Oregonian doesn't know what to do with this issue. Talk about that a little bit. God bless them,
The Oregonian is owned by an out-of-state, I think, a New York corporation. At least it was.
Advanced Publications. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, as a major media corporation, if you go back and look at the Caskey versus Nike case, I participated peripherally in a couple of meetings of the people who were putting together the amicus briefs to file with the Supreme Court when Mark Caskey back in 2001, I think it was, maybe 2002, was suing Nike for their trade practices and for their PR practices. And there were briefs filed on behalf of Nike asserting that this corporation had First Amendment rights of free speech by virtually every major media corporation in America, all the big networks, all the big newspapers, all the big, you know, everybody, and right across the board. So it shouldn't be surprising that they very much like the status quo and they don't want to cover anything that is challenging the status quo. It's tragic, but it's the way it is. We could talk about the history of how, you know, our media has been captured by, you know, corporations and in ways that, you know, frankly, I think that we should be bringing back the Sherman Act. I think that once we strike down the idea that corporations are people and money is speech, we then say, oh, and by the way, you want to own a radio station? One company can own a radio station, and it has to be majority owned by local people. Same for TV station, same for newspaper. Mm-hmm. These are simple, straightforward things that, in my opinion, don't infringe on free speech and would take us back to an era where the news was actually the news.
We are live right now on the phone with Tom Hartman. He's going to be returning to Portland for the Sewell Lecture on Friday, April 26th at the First Unitarian Church. It's at 7 p.m. And after Tom's talk, there's going to be a gathering of community-based organizations working for economic and social justice in Portland. His books are going to be available. We're also talking about the convergence. It's the corporate personhood convergence in Portland. It's this weekend. No. It's actually the weekend of May 3rd through 5th. I need more coffee. Do I need that? So that probably is why Tom isn't going to be there. Anyway.
Lisa, you're doing great. You're doing great. Thanks so much.
Thanks
a lot. Having any details at your fingertips.
But Tom Hartman now. Now, I did the talk radio show just before this, starting at 8. We had Lois Gibbs, the Love Canal community activist, and Mary Pivito, who's a local community organizer, looking at air quality, air toxic air pollution. And they basically came right out and said several times that this is a basic issue of corporate personhood, too, because of the way these corporations are literally able. Love Canal, she's talking about children that were born with double rows of teeth, okay? And a corporation did that, but no one went to jail. And the corporate personhood, if corporations were people, BP would be in San Quentin now? I don't know. But Tom, talk about the history of this movement. I think you know a little bit about it. And how can people really dig into it? Because this does seem bigger than breakfast, you know?
Oh, well, it is bigger than breakfast. It's huge, and it's got a long, long history. I mean, the first time a corporation was recognized as having standing before the Supreme Court was in 1815 in the Dartmouth case. And Dartmouth at that time was a foreign corporation, even, and a foreign for-profit corporation. In 1886, in the famous Santa Clara County case, although the court did not rule that corporations are persons, the head note said that. The Supreme Court has been quoting that headnote ever since, when Lewis Paul was put on the court in 71, I think, by Nixon, maybe it was 73, early 70s by Nixon. Then we got Buckley versus Vallejo, which essentially said money is the same thing as speech, and which was soon followed by First National Bank versus Bilotti, which said that a corporation can engage in pretty much any kind of political speech it wants, rather than just narrowly defined political speech that has to do with its own business. And then, you know, the peak of that was Citizens United. These are all, and this is the important thing, you know, we have three branches of government, and the courts are supposed to be the third among equals. In fact, Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution explicitly says that the Supreme Court shall operate under rules prescribed by Congress. But nonetheless, the Supreme Court has created this doctrine out of whole cloth that has never been voted on by the people. Was never decided by the people, was never even decided by our elected officials, ever, in the history of the United States, that corporations are people and that money is speech. And the only way, well, there's arguably several ways, but I think the most effective way that we can strip this out of the hands, of the Supreme Court, this constitutional monarchy that has taken over America, is to amend the Constitution to say very simply, corporations are not people, and money is property. It is not speech.
And we are live on the phone with Tom Hartman again. He's here on Friday at the First Unitarian Church. The First Unitarian Church is going to do a couple weekends worth of community organizing around this, the movement to amend the Constitution to basically eliminate the status of corporations as people and money as speech. And I want to be crystal clear. So Tom's coming on Friday. Then on the weekend of May 3rd. May 3rd to 5th, activists are going to be coming to Portland for the convergence. It's basically called the convergence to challenge corporate personhood. And I'm sure we're going to get more programming about that before it happens. But Tom, you know, again, we here at KBOO, this is a convergence. It's a hub of people doing community organizing around a lot of different issues, environmentalism, toxics, and stuff like that. And it can be so overwhelming, Tom. I mean, like, how can people plug in? When it's a Supreme Court issue, I think a lot of us are like, whoa, that's out of my hands. Like, what should our status be as our own personal community organizers organizing our own community? What should we be doing? I mean, we're going to talk, but yeah, go ahead.
We need to remember that every time there has been significant social change in this country, up to and including the creation of this country, it started with a small group of people sitting around saying, what can we do? Okay, we can do this. Let's do it. These things are not driven from the top down. They're not driven from the political process even. They are always driven by movements. They are always driven by activists. They are always driven by individuals like yourself, Lisa, like the other people who are showing up, the people who are showing up for the conversions, the people who are, you know, it's not me. It's the people on the ground who get together and say, you know, yes, we are going to fight this battle. And you know, sometimes you don't see it in your own lifetime. You know, Susan B. Anthony never saw women get the vote. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, you know, they sat around and conspired. One of them went to jail over it. You know, I think this one actually we will see in our lifetime. In fact, I think that we'll see it within the next decade and probably half that. There is a general outrage among the American people that our political process has been hijacked and that corporations have way too much power in America. And if we can simply translate that into political action, we can get people out in the streets, we can get people active. And here's the really good news, Lisa. Since I've moved to Washington, D.C., I've had an opportunity to speak with a number of members of Congress. And, you know, where they're like in the studio rather than just coming in on a phone call, as would happen when I was in Portland. And you get a chance to talk to them before or afterwards, and they'll say things candidly that they typically wouldn't say on the air. And as you know, I debate a lot of Republicans. And I've had a startling number, of Republicans say to me, you know, Democrats will come right out and say this, but Republicans typically not, because they usually defend, you know, corporate personhood and they defend money as speech, have come right out and said, I am so friggin' sick and tired of having to spend 5 or 6 hours a day raising money. I mean, there are a few Republicans who are so in bed with the billionaires or come from small states where they don't, you know, it's not such a big problem, the Jim Inhofs of the world. But most of these people, they find it insane that they're spending more time on the telephone begging for money than they are actually legislating. Now, they're legislating things that aren't what you and I would want legislated necessarily, right. But at least they should be doing the people's business. And so I think that if there was a strong, and it's growing, it's there and it's growing, a strong people's movement to say, let us amend the Constitution, to say money is not speech, corporations are not people, and Congress then has the right to pass laws to regulate money in politics and to regulate corporate activity in politics, I think that even the Republicans would jump on board with this because they're sick and tired of this craziness too. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's not generally known.
Exactly.
The other thing that goes along with that is how, you know, how successful David Cobb and others with the Move to Amend group have been. And David has told me this story a bunch of times, and, you know, sometimes on the air, sometimes just over dinner, but it's not a secret that they go out and speak not just in front of progressive groups, not just at UU churches and things like that, but they speak at Tea Party groups.
I was just going to ask you about that. Tom, talk about the Tea Party and the progressive community having common ground here, because the Republicans are struggling for relevancy, even though they have all the money.
Yeah. This is, you know, outside of the funders of the Tea Party. I mean, as we all know, much of the Tea Party, and certainly the origin of the Tea Party, was AstroTurf. You know, it was Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity, which the Koch brothers funded. And it was really designed as a, you know, and it was put together by the same people who back in the day were putting together the anti or the pro-smoking coalition, you know, that had hired Morton Downey Jr. as their front man until he got lung cancer and had to stop. But there are a lot of decent people, good-hearted people, who look around and say things are screwed up. They don't know exactly how or why. They spend too much time on the radio listening to Rush Limbaugh, and so they show up or watching Fox News, and so they show up at the Tea Party rallies. And when you talk to these people and explain to them, you know, how corporations being people and money being speech has distorted our systems, they're right there with you. And it's remarkable. And I think that there is I think this is a genuine populist move as opposed to a political movement. And the populist movements are the ones over history, the anti-slavery populist movement, the abolitionist movement, the women's rights, the women's suffrage movement, the women's rights movement, the anti-discrimination movement. These, although political parties have tried to seize them at various times, claim them at various times, both parties, the fact of the matter is that people-driven, and so is this.
All right, and we are live on the phone with Tom Hartman. Tom is coming to Portland Friday, April 26th, 7 p.m., First Unitarian Church. He's talking about passing the 28th Amendment. Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. It's sponsored by the Economic Justice Action Group. And I believe they're saying no one's going to be turned away due to lack of funds, but they've got like a basic admission of $5. But you should probably go, people. You should probably go. Maybe bring your neighbor. I have this sense that this issue about corporate personhood, I think it really is. It's just about great big sacks of cash. I mean, this really is their biggest money tool. The corporate sector. I mean, how much, Tom, you know, lately we've seen this debate about there's a lot of poverty in this country, but dang, there's a lot of money in this country. How much money is involved with this? I mean, just throw it out. I just want to talk money a little bit.
Well, the total wealth in the United States that's held in private hands is, I think, $46 trillion. The GDP of the United States is $15 trillion. We are a very, very wealthy country, and as you, I'm sure you've talked about, you know, in the last half a decade or so, all of the gains, wage gains, income gains, have gone to the top 1% since basically Reaganomics. I mean, for 33 years, we've watched the middle class be eviscerated, and we've watched this. I mean, the Reagan revolution was a genuine revolution. It was a counter-revolution against the New Deal, which was also a revolution. And it has turned, to the extent it can, America over to the corporations. And let's not forget, Lisa, the plutocrats, the billionaires. By saying money is speech, what that means is that a billionaire, even one who, you know, earns their living sitting on their butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, the five heirs to the Walton fortune, Mitt Romney, and pays a maximum 20% income tax, by the way, because they get a special income tax because they're the chosen few, right? God favored them or something, according to Congress. And they are using this as well. And it's just wrong. We, the people, should be able to say no to this. The other thing, the other caveat, the other thing that I want to point out, Lisa, is that there are a number of groups and there are some politicians who have jumped on this bandwagon, and they're only jumping on halfway. They're saying, well, you know, let's say the corporations can't involve themselves in politics. Or let's say that, you know, and they do these like half steps. Let's just repeal Citizens United really literally did not say money is speech and corporations are people. It used a convoluted logic that brought us that result. And so they say, well, but the essence of Citizens United was simply to strike down a large chunk of McCain-Feingold. And so they say, well, let's just roll back that piece of Citizens United that, you know, put back into place McCain-Feingold. But even McCain-Feingold was a screwed-up system. We have to be very wary of the some of them very well-intentioned, frankly. I know some of these folks. Of the people who are saying, well, let's just go halfway, or let's just take the first step, or let's just, you know, because if we do that, this is frankly my concern, that if, you know, one of the right wingers in the Supreme Court were to step down and be replaced by a progressive like Elena Kagan, and the court revisited Citizens United and then, you know, just pulled back a little bit and said, well, McCain-Feingold is fine, that leaves intact corporate power, that leaves intact power of the billionaires. And that's a very dangerous thing. We need to, I mean, like I said, this is a tree that has been growing since 1815, and we need to cut it at the root. We need to take it all the way down to the bottom.
Let's just call it power of the billionaires, power of the billionaires. I think you got it on a bumper sticker there. And that wonderful Katie Raddatz from the First Unitarian Church called, and she's reminding us that, yes, Tom Hartman is speaking this Friday night about corporate personhood. Then the Activist Convergence in Portland, May 3rd through 5th, which is also at the Unitarian Church. That's going to feature David Cobb, that wonderful guy. He's the chair of the organization Move to Amend. He was a Green Party candidate for president. Full disclosure, I'm going to be speaking there too. And it's a good thing I figured out what the heck weekend it was. Wouldn't you agree? Anyway, Tom Hartman, Tom. So actually, the whole issue of the corporate personhood is it is like the billionaire's bowling ball that knocks down a whole lot of these other things that they get their great big strikes with, basically.
It absolutely is, and that's why it's larger than corporations or people as people. I mean, corporations as people. Back when I was living in Portland, I participated at the First Unitarian Church, in fact, in this debate with a corporation that was running for president. Remember that? I forget the name of the group, but there's kind of a great little guerrilla theater group, and they had put up a fellow who was speaking on behalf of the corporation, but the corporation was running for president.
That's hilarious.
And we did this kind of mock debate, and it was all tongue-in-cheek. And that's great stuff. I mean, that was really important, and it gets people's attention. And the whole idea of a corporation, you know, should corporations be allowed to marry? And, you know, if a corporation merges more than twice, is it bigamy or polygamy? You know, all these kinds of things are great because they raise consciousness, but at the core of it all is really the money is speech part. And that's the part that a lot of the politicians are afraid to touch. And that's the part that I think that we really, really need to go after as well, because the corporations are using that money, but the billionaires are using the money actually more aggressively. The Koch brothers, the Richard Milenskates of the world, the Joe Coors, who's now deceased, but, you know, his types, the Walton Heirs.
The one percenters. The 1%.
The 1/100th of 1%.
We are beginning to think about the possibility of running out of show. And I want to come right back and say, people, Tom Hartman, this Friday night, April 26th, 7 p.m., this is going to be an event you should bring someone to. Someone that you know cares and wants to be active in their local community and maybe wants to learn more. There's a lot of people out there. Some events are... No, go ahead.
Just very quickly,
interrupt.
Don't come so much to listen to me. Come to meet the other people who are there.
After Tom speaks, a gathering of community-based organizations working for economic and social justice is going to be meeting there. Books will be available and refreshments at the community gathering. And we're speaking live on the phone with Tom Hartman. We're going to let him wiggle off the line in just 1 minute, but I just want to be clear with people. This Friday, April 26, 7 p.m., First Unitarian Church, and he is specifically speaking on passing the 28th Amendment. He's delivering the Sewell lecture. Speaking of justice, corporations are not people. Money is not speech. And then on the weekend of May 3rd through 5th, the convergence in Portland of the Movement to Amend, Move to Amend the organization. That's at movetoamend.org. And I'm going to be speaking at that. David Cobb is going to be there. So this is a great opportunity for people to just plug in and engage. And actually, you're going to learn about kind of a lot of stuff, different things that may not seem linked that are actually linked by this issue of money as speech. Tom, what's the most important thing for people to know about this issue? What's just the most? We're putting it on a bumper sticker now. What's the most important thing?
that it's going to be people power versus billionaire power. It's going to be average person versus the billionaires and the corporations, that this is the battle of our lifetime.
Right on. It is kind of similar to a zombie apocalypse. It just doesn't involve actual zombies.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? We're looking around for our zombie apocalypse team, and you're not looking at your Facebook page for that. Not really.
And KBOO's talking about this a lot, so please support KBOO. Not so, therefore, but you know, I've done fundraisers for KBOO for years, but please support KBOO also, because you know, you've got a great progressive voice there in Portland, and people so need to be supporting what you're doing.
Awesome. And Tom Hartman, thank you so much again for being with us.
Lisa, it's an honor. Thank you for having me.
Real pleasure. Tom Hartman, Friday, April 26th, 7 p.m., First Unitarian Church. Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. Find out more about that at firstunitarianportland.org. And thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9:30. Coming up next, Cindy Folkers and Mary Olson speak on post-Fukushima food monitoring and gender matters in the atomic age. At 10 o'clock here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, author Matilda Bernstein Sycamore gives an interview about her new memoir, The End of San Francisco. And later, we'll hear an excerpt from the Electronic Intifada weekly podcast. At 11 on the Recovery Zone, the topic is Rethinking Money While Taking a Look at Bitcoin. Host Stephanie Potter speaks with local Bitcoin and alternative currency experts who are rethinking the concept of money. Join the discussion.
93% of Oregon's prison population return to their communities. This includes people convicted of a sex crime. Many people convicted of a sexual offense want to change their behaviors and seek treatment in our communities. April 29th on Prison Pipeline, a sex therapist explains public misperceptions of and treatment for persons convicted of sex crimes. She'll tell about the lost opportunity to educate a Southeast Portland community after the neighborhood's harsh criticism forced her to move her clinic. That's Prison Pipeline, April 29th at 6:30 p.m.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Fukushima Symposium 2013. Cindy Folkers and Mary Olson. Post-Fukushima Food Monitoring and Gender Matters in the Atomic Age. Cindy Folkers specializes in radiation impacts on health. She works with Beyond Nuclear. Beyond Nuclear calls attention to the connection between nuclear power and nuclear weapons, and the need to abandon both to safeguard our future. She and Mary Olson spoke at the Fukushima Symposium in New York City on March 12, 2013. Here first is Cindy Folkers.
I want to start out by thanking Dr. Helen Caldicott and Physicians for Social Responsibility for this symposium. It's amazing, and I want the public to know that you are getting information here that would not be readily available to us otherwise. So, just how contaminated is our food? I got this question a lot of times after Fukushima exploded, and I'm still getting it, and it's frustrating because it doesn't have a good answer. We know that radiation from Fukushima did reach the U.S. directly. Iodine-131, cesium-137 and 134 are evidence of this. Other radioisotopes could have reached us as well, but they're harder to detect. This doesn't make them less important, but my talk will focus on cesium for a number of reasons, which will become clear. So what needs to be assessed from this point forward is how cesium cycles and becomes concentrated or biomagnified in the environment over the long term, and where it might enter our food supply as a result. So what are the most important points for understanding radiation in this food monitoring context? Radiation is expelled from the nucleus of an atom and is represented by a unit called a becquerel. One becquerel is equal to one atomic disintegration per second, and different radionuclides give off different kinds of radiation. Different types of radiation are blocked by different substances depending on the density of the substance and the quality of the radiation itself. And certain types of radiation that would be less damaging outside our bodies can become much more damaging if taken internally, inhaled or ingested, since there's nothing inside our cells to block this radioactive energy. In this case, each one of these disintegrations or hits, represented by a becquerel, may cause damage and disease. Also, because some radiation is more easily blocked, like alpha and beta particle radiation, it can be challenging to measure certain radionuclides inside food if this is the only type of radiation that they emit. In general, gamma radiation is easier to measure because it travels through most material more easily, like the flesh of an apple or the flesh of a fish. This makes gamma the obvious choice for testing because you don't need to do anything extra to the food to prepare it, like cut an apple or pulp the apple. The radionuclide cesium-137 emits a gamma ray, so it is the radionuclide most often measured. But even if you don't find that cesium gamma, it doesn't mean the food doesn't contain other radionuclides that are of concern, like strontium-90, plutonium-239. So obviously measuring food for just gamma has serious limitations, but it would be a reasonable start in any food testing program. Fukushima isn't the only source of cesium contamination. We have been being exposed to man-made radiation for generations from a number of different sources. So atomic bomb blasts worldwide, 954 petabecquerels, this is a big number. Every nuclear power reactor releases radionuclides to water and air as part of their operating plan. It doesn't take an accident to release this material, although we know they've had plenty of those as well. A total release amount for cesium-134